Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I want to thank you so much for joining me, Randy L. Noble, as your host today on the broadcast. It is Monday, August 13th, 2018. Summer is almost over, and fall is very, very close and around the corner. A lot has been happening these past few days, and I've been posting all about it on my Facebook page. Just a jubilant, joyful time for me. Just last Wednesday, I authorized Amazon to have my book published in paperback. Previous to that, the Kindle version of my new book, Broken Yet Beautiful, was available. I received the proof copy for my paperback in the mail and looked it over. It looks just fantastic. And I went to my dashboard, as they call it, the member dashboard at Amazon, and clicked approve, which means that now my paperback version along with the Kindle will both be available simultaneously. I did that and then went to work, and as I was at work and got very busy, I happened to look down at my phone, and there was a notification from the website World Citizens for Saudi Women, which I follow, with the issues of Saudi women on that particular website. My eyes caught this message that absolutely just sent shockwaves of joy through my system. It said, Amna is free. Amna is finally free. And I knew exactly what that was referring to. My dear friend, Amna Al-Juwayd, who had been in prison in Saudi Arabia since October of 2017, was finally released from prison. And I just threw a celebration right there at work. There were people working around me doing their jobs, and I just yelled and screamed with joy when I saw this. I couldn't believe it. It took me by total surprise, and then I realized this event happened the same day my book was published, which has a dedication to my friend Amna in it. And if you read, when you read the book, you'll see in the first few pages my little story about Amna and what she suffered with being put in prison by her father for defying the male guardianship law. And then I told the story about the oppression of Saudi women, and we need to pray for Amna and all Saudi women. And this book is dedicated to her. And then I was just overjoyed. God, in his mysterious, wonderful providence, on the day my book is published in paperback, released my dear friend that I have been praying for all these 10 months, and you, my Facebook friends, have been praying for these last 10 months. And I couldn't get my thinking straight. I was just so happy. This happened the day my book was published. I thought, Lord, you've heard our prayers. And in your marvelous providence, you tied in her release with the publication of my book. And I was just so humbled that somehow he did it and timed it at that time, because he knows how much I've been worried about her and thinking about her. I've had petitions out for her freedom. I've talked about her. And it was just a day of celebration. Now, I don't know the circumstances about this. What I can tell you is that it has always been my understanding that the only person that can allow her to be let out of prison is her father. That's the way I've always understood this. However, through the sources of another human rights activist, I have found out that he wanted to extend her sentence. And somehow someone intervened in Amna's cause and provided her release from prison. So the father wanted her to stay longer. And I thought he was the only one that can determine her release. But however, that was not the case. Amna is in an undisclosed location. And I don't know if she has got a cell phone. I don't know if she's up on social media. I sent a message to her Facebook account, which has been managed by her friends all of this time, and I've heard nothing back. So it's a very volatile situation. And we need to remember one thing. Amna, thank God, is free from prison, a bad prison situation for women there. She's free from that situation, but in a very technical way, Amna is still a prisoner of Saudi Arabia because of the conditions there. But thank God she is no longer in that prison. In that prison, there has been reports of the Saudi women being raped by guards. And then if they are not helped by their family after so long a time, they can be married off to other men. So I am rejoicing in her release. And I wanted to say thank you, all of my dear Facebook friends, for your concern, for your faithful praying. Do you see the power of prayer? This is a perfect illustration of how God changes and shapes history through our praying. We never know for sure if God will answer in the way we've prayed. He may choose to do something different. He is God. He is sovereign. But in this case, he heard all of our prayers. He listened and showed compassion and mercy upon Amna. And to that, all of us are very, very grateful and rejoicing in what our great God has done in Saudi Arabia. And so I hope soon I will hear from Amna and just find out exactly what is going on with her. But again, it's very volatile for her to be out. This is not an easy situation. I don't know who she's staying with. My first assumption is that she would go home with her parents, and perhaps that's not the case right now. But again, I have not heard back from my friends at World Citizens for Saudi Women. They are my really only link to Amna, and they haven't answered my messages in a few days. And so I hope to hear from them a little something about this situation. So please, I know you've been praying faithfully, but please continue to pray for Amna. Even though she is free from prison, she is still, if you will, a prisoner because she lives yet in Saudi Arabia. I hope and pray with all of my heart that somehow, some way, God would open a door for her to leave that country and find real freedom elsewhere. So please, though, we've prayed, please continue to pray for Amna in this situation. But I wanted to share that with you this morning. So happy for what has happened. We go from a very happy celebration, something good that happened, to something very, very sad. In the past week, there has been a lot of mourning going on in Iran over a family that lost their daughter, Homa Soltani, who is the daughter of the imprisoned internee, Abdul Fattah Soltani. She died at the age of 27 after heart failure. A young 30-year-old Iranian girl named Homa Soltani. Now, Homa had been raised far from the arms of her father for years. Her young heart was not strong enough to bear all the cruelty and misery imposed by the Iranian regime on her family for the past 7 years. And despite her young age, she suffered a heart attack and passed away. Her father had been in prison for several years. He was accused of supporting those human rights of those in Iran that stood up for freedom. Her father, who is Abdul Fattah, is considered one of the founding fathers of the Society of Human Rights. He was accused of anti-regime activism, and he had been in prison since he defended an accused group of the ideology political case. The grief and pressure on him and his family cannot be put into words. During his imprisonment until now, he had lost his mother, sister, and now his young daughter. His doleful face implies all these years of distress and how he has been obliged to waste the best years of his life behind the cell bars just for defending human rights and then see his family members die one after another. Such cruelty and oppression imposed on him and his family are not easy to forget. He was allowed out of prison on furlough to attend his daughter's funeral. During the funeral ceremony, Homa's mother said in tears, "This 7-year cruel separation of a father from his family will be history." The imprisoned attorney and his wife announced, "Our child actually belongs to Iran and represents millions of other young population or young children born in hard times with plenty of miseries." She grew up with all such miseries, and now she has decided to fly towards eternity. Regarding this recent tragic event, several women political prisoners, including Golrakh Ari, Nazanin Zahagri, Nazreen Sotouda, Atna Dayami, and Narges Mohammadi wrote a note of condolence to these bereaved parents saying, "Everyone knows it would never be easy for you to, as a bereaved father, one of the most stubborn supporters of human rights and the most sympathetic figure in Iran, as a compassionate, helpful mother through the civil society, to tolerate this dramatic amount of grief and sadness." I wanted to talk to you from also Iran Human Rights, Hadi Gahami. The images of imprisoned Iranian lawyer Abdul Fattah Soltani embracing his son in grief after temporarily leaving prison to mourn the death of his 30-year-old daughter bring into sharp relief the human cost of defending law in Iran. Soltani is currently serving his 7th year of a 13-year prison sentence for defending political prisoners in court. The punishment the authorities are willing to inflict to stamp out any perceived challenges to their dictates, innocent lives spent behind bars, families ripped apart from years, speaks only to their contempt for the rule of law, but also to the absence of the most basic tenets of humanity. At his daughter's grave, this brave man said, "Pledge to never forget the people." Let us all, inside and outside Iran, show the same bravery. This can begin with Iran's own bar situation, which should defend its own members and extend to citizens and officials alike in Iran and members of the international community. Let us not forget the Soltanis, the Satudas, and all the other human rights defenders who are behind bars, sacrificing years of their lives to defend the rights and freedoms that belong to all people. It is time to speak out loudly, clearly, and without fear of compromise for human decency, for the law, and for the complete unacceptability of imprisoning individuals who work to uphold the nation's law and protect its people. Hadi Gahami, International Iran Human Rights Organization, speaking out for the imprisoned lawyer Abdul Fattah Soltani, who was set out and released on furlough to attend the funeral of his dear daughter, Homa Soltani. I want to just add this. These are brave human rights defenders who worked so very hard in a dictatorship government to defend the human rights of so many prisoners. They are brave, compassionate, hardworking people. Please let us not forget them. Please let us pray for the Soltani family in their hour of grief, realizing, as the Bible says, the Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He saves the crushed in spirit. Speaking of Iran, I want to go to an interview with Senator Joseph Lieberman, who has stood defending the Iranians' human rights now for the past several years. And he was recently on Fox News talking about the new sanctions being placed on the Iranian government. And I want you to hear this interview. He explains the reason why the Trump administration has done this and what the outcome will be. So again, we are talking about Iran this morning. We are talking about human rights and the new sanctions being placed on the evil government regime and what it is going to accomplish. I want you to hear this brief interview this morning with Senator Joseph Lieberman.
So Iran's foreign minister firing back at the U.S. after the Trump administration reimposed these sanctions. The president calling on other countries not to buy Iranian oil, but our next guest is giving the president a lot of credit for these tough new actions. We're joined today by former Connecticut senator and chairman for United Against Nuclear Iran, Joe Lieberman. It's good to see you again, sir.
You too, Bill.
How's life on the other side?
Life is good. You know, I loved my 24 years in the Senate, although it got kind of frustrating at the end. It was hard to get anything done, but this is a great chapter, too.
Well, you look good.
Feel good.
I think you look better, actually.
It looks good.
You know, once
less
you get
stress
outside the swamp, right?
And it's great to have you in studio
thank
this
you
morning. And you have seen this president moving forward firmly on Iran. First of all, how do you look on at the president's policy here?
Well, I totally agree with it, and I'm very grateful for it. I mean, as Bill said, I'm here as chair of a group called United Against Nuclear Iran, a bipartisan group focused really on trying to convince businesses as Congress, including led by people like me and Republicans and Democrats, adopted sanctions, economic pressure on Iran. UANI, United Against Nuclear Iran, put pressure on businesses to stay out of Iran, saying it was risky business and it was wrong to deal with this extremist regime. At the negotiations, the so-called P5+1, including the Obama administration, I think gave away all that pressure for a very inadequate agreement, temporary pause in nuclear weapons development, nothing about missile limiting missile development or any of the other bad behavior of Iran. And, you know, it looked like we were going to have to figure out how to live with it. But then President Trump comes along and does exactly what he said he would do during the campaign. It's a whole new world.
So he reimposed these sanctions the other night, midnight.
Yeah.
They took effect Tuesday.
Right.
And now he says more are coming in November. Will they work?
I think they're going to help, because I think particularly they're coming at a time when there's more instability in Iran than there's been for a long, long time, probably since the protest after the fraudulent elections in June of 2009. What I mean is the economy is tanking. The Rial, the currency of Iran, has lost 80% of its value in the last year. Unemployment is sky high. Almost every day, somewhere in Iran, there's a protest to the government. And It's mostly about the economy, about corruption in the government, about extremism in the government. And some of it, interestingly, is we don't want to be in Lebanon. We don't want to be in Gaza. We want our money to be spent here in Iran on
That's what the Iranians are saying.
That's what the Iranian people are saying. So these sanctions from President Trump, the administration will squeeze the Iranians more, and I think maybe force the government to come back and negotiate a better nuclear agreement, or may lead to a new Iranian revolution.
Let me touch on that, because we really don't know what's behind door number two.
Right.
Just a couple business matters here. Here's the latest tweet from the president on this on screen. He says the Iran sanctions officially been cast, he writes. These are the most biting sanctions ever imposed. And in November, they ratchet up to yet another level. That's when the oil sanctions kick in on November 5th. Anyone doing business with Iran will not be doing business with the United States. That's a direct message to the Europeans. I'm asking for world peace, nothing less. In contrast, Nancy Pelosi came out and basically slammed this agreement. Here's what she said. This counterproductive action only diminishes America's international credibility, erodes our relationships with our NATO and EU allies, and sets back the path toward a more stable region and peaceful non-nuclear future. Now, you just said something. You believe this could lead to a second revolution
in
Iran.
I do.
What is that revolution? What is that leadership? What is that country without the mullahs in charge?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be chaotic, and I'm afraid these mullahs are capable of behaving just like Assad has in Syria. If their people rise up, they'll turn their guns on their own people. But maybe not. And what I see is a country where the majority of people are really fed up with the government. And there's every reason for them to be fed up. No freedom, but really no economic opportunity. A lot of corruption at the top of the government. And I think these sanctions, you know, businesses, the European governments are clinging to this Iran nuclear agreement. Their businesses are not, because the direct challenge that President Trump issued is exactly what they're thinking about in the boardrooms in Europe, which is, do you want to do the EU has something like $16 billion of annual trade back and forth with Iran. The EU has well over $1 trillion of trade back and forth with the U.S.
Selection. We're going to go to North Korea in a moment here. But yes or no, when John Bolton comes on TV and says we're not interested in regime change, are they of a different name, however, interested in changing that regime?
Well, I hope so. I mean, this has to start from the people of Iran up, but we have to try to, if that happens, I think it's in our interest to help them. But listen, the government has an opportunity to negotiate reasonably, and I think the only way this group of extremists will really negotiate to end their nuclear program and stop all the other bad behavior is if they think it's the only choice they have to keep their regime in power. And they may be coming close to that moment because of the pressure economically.
When you talk about our European allies, though, Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, making it very clear in this tweet today, saying the regime in Iran is at odds with world peace. We urge our allies and partners to join the U.S. and deny Iran's leadership the funds to oppress the Iranian people and to foment terrorism around the world. That being said, last night the president had this meeting.
What a very insightful interview on Fox News with Senator Joseph Lieberman, who is part of a group United Against a Nuclear Iran. Some very important things that he said there we need to go over. The purpose of these economic sanctions is to squeeze Iran's regime, to squeeze this evil regime and corner them in such a way that they know they cannot prosper and financially move forward. Now, just recently, they signed some kind of deal with Russia and other nations for the sale of the Caspian Sea, or the rights to the use of the Caspian Sea. It's a very complicated, complex deal, but many Iranians are just absolutely furious that this illegitimate regime is taking their country and selling its rights to a nation like Russia. That's in the news. So with the sanctions going on right now that's squeezing this evil regime and the people, hundreds of thousands of them in the streets and cities across Iran, yelling out death to the dictator, yelling out for financial freedom, to stop giving money to terrorists, death to the dictator. All of this is happening. And these sanctions, these new sanctions have just been implemented, and it's going to go to a whole nother level in November. With all of this happening, I believe that something critical, something very critical is about to happen. I believe the cracks in the foundation of this evil, illegitimate regime are cracking rapidly, and it's going to just implode very soon. And I believe what President Trump is doing is to cause such chaos in the government that there will be an overthrow, a coup, that this regime will be upended. And then democracy and freedom can once again come to Iran. This is very important. As all of us watch from the sidelines and see what's happening in Iran, it is very similar to the Iranian Revolution in 1978-79, which forced the Shah into exile. And now it's coming full circle, I believe, again, to where this corrupt government that has been in power for almost 40 years is about to be dissolved. I've said this on many programs. I've talked about how the Bible talks about God raises up kingdoms and brings them down. He is sovereign and he is in control. And he has heard the cries of the Iranian people and he is answering prayer. He is doing what the Word of God says he does. He hears the cries of the oppressed, and he, I believe, has come to deliver the Iranian people from the bondage, the tyranny, and the dictatorship of this government. We watch on the sidelines, but let us not forget to support the Iranian people, to pray for them, and do everything we can. I believe the day is approaching. It's coming very, very soon. And we're going to see a historical change, I believe, within the next several months in Iran. I hope that that is what's going to happen. I have so many friends that have joined me in praying and speaking out for the Iranian people. And I believe these circumstances are orchestrated by our great God who hears the cries of the oppressed. Well, what I want to do is I want to shift gears with you this morning. I'm going to talk in the next half an hour about a very incredibly brave young German activist named Sophie Scholl, who was part of a resistance movement called the White Rose Resistance in Germany during World War II. And I'm going to talk about Sophie. I'm going to talk about a lot of things related to Sophie. But this is a song I want to share with you that talks a little bit about those times in our lives when it seems like God is far away and silent. Many years ago, a famous little poem was written on a cellar wall in Germany during the Holocaust by a Holocaust person. And it's a beautiful statement of truth and trust in the midst of darkness. And I want you to hear what he had to write. I believe in the sun, even when it is not shining. I believe in love, even when I cannot feel it. I believe in God, even when he is silent. I want you to hear this beautiful song by Barlow Girl, I Believe in Love.
Cost me everything, so I'll stand.
Those are the Barla Girls, a very, very powerful song, a song of hope in dark and difficult times. I believe in love. I believe in the sun. Even when it's not shining, I believe in God, even when he is silent. Powerful music. Last Friday, my wife and I went to the premiere of the movie, the newest documentary film by Dinesh D'Souza, entitled Death of a Nation, and we were really unprepared for just how powerful it was. Dinesh in this movie actually shows the parallels of philosophy between Hitler's National Socialism and the Democratic Party platform, and how everything is state-controlled, lack of freedom, no freedom of speech, no freedom of religion, really. And he showed these parallels that the Nazis themselves in Germany were comparing notes with what was going on here in the United States, and they began to see some similarities between their philosophy and the philosophies for mainline Democrats at that time. And so the philosophies of fascism, racism, and socialism were all explained in this movie as belonging not to white Republicans or right-wingers, as we're called, or conservatives, but all of these philosophies of fascism, socialism, racism, all of them bear witness to the origin and roots of the Democratic Party. And it was a very powerful movie, but the most powerful part of the movie came near the end, when Dinesh said, well, how do we fight against this philosophy, this ideology? How do we fight against these accusations that we are the real racists, that we are the real fascists? How do we fight against a political party who has implemented the real socialism and the fascism and the racism that they're accusing us of? How do we fight them? And Dinesh provided an answer. He took us back in time to 1942 Germany in Munich, where a young group of university students, Hans and Sophie Scholl, formed a group called the White Rose Resistance Movement that published leaflets, and they used the power of words. They were not radical, and they were not implementing a force or violence. It was a nonviolent protest against National Socialism in Germany. They stood up to Adolf Hitler, the dictator, by printing these leaflets, urging the German people to take the blinders off their eyes and join them in resisting this evil dictator. Hans and Sophie were arrested, tried, and executed by guillotine. When I saw this scene in the movie, I'm telling you, I was overcome emotionally. And as a writer and an author, I knew right away that I had to write about them. And so it had just been a couple of days since I had published my book on Kindle. And after attending the movie Death of a Nation, I was just jubilant. This I have to write about. And so that is the theme of my new book. And what I want to do right now on the cross in the desert, I want you to hear for the next 10 minutes the story of these amazing, courageous, young university students who stood up to the dictatorship government in Nazi Germany during World War II and paid for it with their lives. This is the legacy of the White Rose. Let's listen.
In Nazi Germany, the vast majority of the German people submitted to their fascist leadership and stood silent in the face of their government's brutal oppression of Jews and other minorities. But some small groups resisted. One such group was the White Rose, whose members risked all and paid with their lives. Today, the White Rose, including its most celebrated members, Sophie and Hans Scholl, remains essential to how the German people comprehend the Nazi era and understand themselves. When Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime came to power in 1933, It brought welcome prosperity to a land devastated by unemployment and inflation. The regime's increased military spending gave a boost to the economy. Hitler's popularity skyrocketed. As the Third Reich continued to gain power, it employed aggressive propaganda to spur nationalistic fervor. By 1939, in the midst of World War II, German nationalism had reached an all-time high. Encouraged by rallies, promotional films, and Hitler youth organizations, younger Germans especially embraced Hitler's ideals. Under Hitler, Germany officially stood one people, one empire, one leader. Outraged by the atrocities conducted by their fascist government, a number of medical students and one of their professors at the University of Munich formed what became known as the White Rose. The students came from middle-class German families and shared a philosophy influenced by the philosophers Laozi, Aristotle, Goethe, Novalis, and the teachings of the Christian Church. The White Rose produced and distributed anonymous leaflets and painted anti-Nazi graffiti on the campus of the University of Munich. These leaflets detailed the Nazis' atrocities and called for the German people to rebel against their government. Readers were asked to join in passive resistance to the National Socialist Party through the copying and redistribution of the leaflets. Producing the leaflets, six in total, was difficult and risky. The government considered all such activity treason and virtually eliminated opposition by prosecuting and severely punishing resistance. Even obtaining paper was difficult due to rationing.
You couldn't go to the post office and buy 100 postal stamps for your envelopes. You would become suspicious. If you did this in several post offices, the post office would know and would start notifying the Gestapo.
The leaflets had to be duplicated by a hand-cranked mimeograph machine. Distribution was also challenging. Some of the leaflets were mailed, while others were left in public places such as telephone booths. Because members of the White Rose suspected that the Gestapo was opening mail, they sometimes sent leaflets to themselves to check that they were reaching their intended audience. Even being the recipient of a leaflet could place someone under suspicion.
Most recipients of these leaflets turned them in to the police because they didn't know whether the people who sent these were honest anti-Nazi people or whether they were actually Nazi officials who wanted to test you.
Since citizens were encouraged to report any anti-government activity, almost 60% of the White Rose's mailings were turned in to the Gestapo. Despite these obstacles, over a period of nearly 2 years, the White Rose successfully produced and distributed six leaflets. On February 18, 1943, Sophie and Hans Scholl, neglecting to inform the other members of the White Rose as was customary, entered a building at the University of Munich while the other students were in class. While the halls were empty, they distributed copies of the sixth leaflet outside of each classroom. They then carried a sheaf of leaflets to the building's atrium, where Sophie threw them off a balcony into the courtyard below.
Sophie and Hans did this in a moment of joy, and it's called in German Übermut, that frivolous act, and not thinking of the consequences. That I have no other explanation. It was probably the most foolish thing they did.
Unfortunately for Sophie and Hans, a janitor caught them in the act. When they were arrested by the Gestapo, a draft of a seventh leaflet was found in Hans's pocket. The handwriting on the draft was identified as that of Christoph Probst, who was brought in for questioning. 4 days later, all three were brought to trial in front of the Volksgerichtshof, the People's Court established to try offenses against the German state. Judge Roland Kreisler acted as judge, prosecutor, and jury. The three defendants were found guilty of high treason and executed by guillotine the same day. Later that year, the Gestapo hunted down and captured Alexander Schmorell, Willy Graf, and Professor Kurt Huber. The three were tried and executed for high treason. Before his execution, Professor Huber wrote to his son, "I died for Germany's freedom, for truth, and honor. Faithfully, I served these three until my very last heartbeat." Despite their martyrdom, the members of the White Rose had little immediate impact. There was no mass outcry after the execution. Copies of the sixth leaflet found their way to Allied forces, and millions of leaflets were airdropped over Germany. Still, the majority of Germans were compliant with the Nazi regime through the remainder of the war. When the White Rose is spoken of today, it is most often in connection with the names Sophie and Hans Scholl. The siblings have become icons in the history of nonviolent resistance, depicted again and again in popular media and historical literature. Yet, they were only two of the White Rose activists. People respond to events in history by finding good stories. Sophie and Hans, as brother and sister, are often perceived as the leading dramatic heroes of this particular story. But it was all the members of the White Rose who fought for their beliefs. The real legacy of this movement is its impact on society today. Throughout the world, the White Rose stands as a symbol of courage. But in Germany, the impact is more profound. The White Rose movement not only provides an example of righteous Germans, but also helps ordinary Germans to answer the agonizing question of why more of them did not resist.
There were people who resisted in a variety of ways, whether it was doing something very small, such as writing or distributing a leaflet, but there were also serious and severe consequences for these acts, and people who chose to resist were punished accordingly if they were caught. And such consequences also answer the question of why didn't more people resist. They didn't resist because they saw what would happen if they did.
The German national identity is painfully connected with its Nazi legacy. Memorials, national events, and legislation ensure that the German people will not forget the past atrocities. But the memory of the White Rose gives nuance to this guilt.
It's especially important for young people in Germany today to think back and know that not everyone in their country's past was compliant with Nazi policies. And I think that the history and the story of the White Rose actually helps people believe that there were indeed people who were willing to give their life to fight evil.
Today, memorials throughout the world recall the brutal acts committed by the German people during the Nazi era. In stark contrast stands the White Rose Memorial. The brave revolutionaries it represents are an important reminder of righteous Germans. Throughout Germany and the world, the White Rose stands as a symbol of the courage of the human spirit.
I'll tell you, I cannot begin to explain to you the emotional impact the scene in this movie, Death of a Nation, had on me. I knew the very next day that this would be my new book in the future, and I have begun researching, purchasing the diaries of Hans and Sophie on Kindle, the interrogation, which is also on Kindle, which fills in all of the blanks of what happened after they were arrested, what they were asked, what they were charged with, how it was conducted. I have several books now on Kindle that depict their life story and legacy. I want to share with you a quote from Sophie, very close to the time before she died. And this is such a powerful statement, and I want to talk about this statement with you. Sophie writes, how can we expect righteousness to prevail when there is hardly anyone willing to give himself up individually to a righteous cause? Such a fine, sunny day, and I have to go. But what does my death matter if, through us, thousands of people are awakened and stirred to action? This is what Sophie wrote just before her execution. She described it as a sunny day. She had hope and optimism that in spite of her martyrdom, if she can arouse and awaken a people asleep and blinded, that her mission has been accomplished. And that's what our cause is all about. In our country, where our freedoms are being challenged, where socialism seems to have taken a grip on the souls of many uneducated, uninformed people, if they understood the implications of socialism and national socialism, they would never believe this. But we are in the midst of a civil war here, where our Constitution is being undermined. The President of the United States, and I'm talking about Obama, in the last administration, did everything to subvert the rulings of the Constitution. We are in a political storm. And just like Sophie, we need to awaken people to the storm that we're facing. Our human rights are being challenged. Our freedom of speech is being challenged. This is much like it was in National Socialistic Germany. We're facing the same thing with political ideologies that are challenging our freedoms. And so Sophie says, what can you expect righteousness to prevail if no one is willing to stand up for the truth? And that's what Sophie and Hans did. These courageous young 21-year-old university students saw what was happening. They saw a dictator trying to undermine the German people and the German society. They saw a dictator putting to death millions of Jews. They saw the fruit of National Socialism as nothing but evil and satanic, and they refused to stay silent. Sophie says, stand up for what you believe, even if you are standing alone. What courage. This young 21-year-old university student who loved nature. In her diary writings, she talks about sitting by the streams of a lake or a pond and just reveling in God's creation. Hans and Sophie were both committed Christians. Sophie went on to say also, I will cling to the rope God has thrown me in Jesus Christ, even when my numb hands can no longer feel it. This is the White Rose. And the White Rose lives on. The title of my new book will be Sophie Scholl, The White Rose Lives On, because her example of fearlessness and courage, the example of Hans and the rest of the members of the White Rose, they put their lives on the line and made the ultimate sacrifice for truth and for freedom. It's not hard for me to write something like this. Just a couple of years ago, I wrote about a very courageous young lady in prison who had such a dramatic effect on women prisoners. She was in prison simply because she defended herself against a government rapist. And I'm talking about Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, a book I wrote. The point is, I am so captivated by courageous young women activists, Netta Sultan, Rahane Jabari, and Sophie Scholl. And so when I hear about a story like this, it is very, very easy for me to sit down and write about them. Just remember this about Sophie. Sophie and Hans were part of a resistance group, and what they did was phenomenal. Their legacy lives on today. They fought against a tyrant with words, nonviolent. They fought against a tyrant with words, and they succeeded. You may say, well, the war continued on for 3 years after their death, but look at the impact they have today on activists like myself. Such a legacy that they leave. Sophie went to the guillotine, and the person there that was her executioner, is quoted as saying, "I've never seen anyone so calm before. Think about this, the guillotine. In just a split second, you lose your head. You're dead." But Sophie courageously faced her execution because her trust and faith was in Jesus. She had a personal relationship with the God of the universe through Jesus. She had a calmness and a peace that Jesus gave her in the face of death. This young activist girl went to the guillotine completely assured of her eternity. Why? Because her trust and faith was in Christ, was in the Lord of the universe, was in her Creator, in her God. She could face death because the Bible says nothing shall separate us from the love of God. Nothing in all creation can separate us from Him. And she is with Him today. But the White Rose legacy lives on. And I'm looking forward to constructing this story in such a way that I hope I can impact your life, that you can be someone like a Sophie who, in the midst of darkness and trial, in the midst of ideologies that want to take away our human rights and our dignities, that like Sophie, you will be unafraid and courageous, stand up to this ideology and know that with the power of Christ in your life, you can do anything. You can move mountains. You can do what God has created you to do, and that is to be a voice for the truth, to be a voice against evil, to be a voice of truth. And that is the legacy that Sophie leaves us. And so today, on the cross in the desert, we've talked about Ron. We've talked about their desperate situation. We've talked about lives that have been hurt by this evil regime. But we also recognize that just like the White Rose was able to make an impact in dictatorship, Nazi-controlled Germany, so we too, with the power of words, can make an impact on evil regimes like the Iranian regime that is oppressing its people. God is on our side. What we do is not in vain because He gives us the power and the grace to speak against evil and to see God change history through our actions and through our prayers. He can do that. I'm so inspired by Sophie. I hope you are too. I want to thank you so much for taking time out this morning to listen to the radio broadcast. Thank you so much for sharing in the joy of my friend Amna's release from prison. But our work is not yet done. We continue to speak out and pray for the freedom of all Iranians, for the freedom of all Saudi women. Thank you. God bless you. Have yourself an incredible week, and I will see you next Monday on the Cross in the Desert.